And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Hi, everybody. I'm for apologetics. Oh, don't you love it? I hope everybody had a great weekend. Yes, it's time for Hands-On Apologetics, where the rubber of catechesis meets the road of everyday life. You have entered into Virgin Most Powerful Apologetic Dojo, and it's fight night at the dojo. Yes, we're going to be talking to a champion, a former champion of the ring, perhaps. I think he's a reigning champion in a way. Talk about some of his biggest battles. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, you know, you probably heard me describe on previous programs how the early days of modern apologetics movement back in the 90s, and Catholics really started coming into their own in terms of defending and explaining the faith. I likened it to the Wild West. You know, it was a wild and crazy time. And there was literally hundreds of thousands of Catholics were leaving the church for fundamentalism and evangelicalism, but mostly fundamentalist movement was the big I don't know what you would say, bad wolf who was sheep stealing. And anyway, in those Wild West days, there was the equivalent of the gunfight, you know, like gunfight at OK Corral. And what I mean by that is there were debates, and some pretty big and feisty debates. I'm not talking about the type of formal debates that you see nowadays. These things were pretty rough and tumble. It was like the old John L. Sullivan, you know, knockdown, drag-out fights. Well, anyway, today on the program, we are going to talk about a man who... It's definitely one of those early gunslingers who participated in a number of wild and woolly debates. We're going to talk about that. Carl Keating, Master Apologist Carl Keating, is going to join us today at the Apologetics Dojo. And that just kicks off an incredible week, as far as I'm concerned, for Hands-On Apologetics. For example, we got Carl today. Coming up tomorrow, my good friend Roy Showman's going to come on the show, talk about how the Virgin Mary led this MIT Jewish wunderkind, you know, a wonder kid, into the Catholic Church. That's going to be cool. Longtime friend of Roy. It's going to be fun. Wednesday, we're going to have the blue collar apologist, John Martinoni, coming to the dojo. You know, he always kicks up the energy level a couple of notches when he steps foot in the ring, so to speak. And he's going to show us. We're going to talk about sola fide, faith alone. And then finally, on Friday, another longtime friend. Some of you may be familiar with him if you listen to early morning Catholic radio. Matt Swaim. Matt Swaim, former host of the Sunrise Morning Show. And he's also a convert, by the way. To Catholicism. He's going to share with us his journey of faith. So, man, it's just the 1, 2, 3. I can't wait for this week to unfold. I especially can't wait for this program. All weekend, I've been watching old debates, you know, some stuff on YouTube, and it's going to be fun to talk with Carl about that. And as always, we're going to also do our critical thinking skills. Today, we're on the Finding the Fallacy segment. We're going to talk about the argument from silence. And also, we're going to meet an early church father before the break. And the early church father for today is Dionysius the Great. Not so well-known early church father, although he was a pretty prominent person in his day. So that'd be fun. And as always, you are part of the program. So first, I want to give my shout-outs to everybody watching on live stream and YouTube. Hello, everybody. It's great to see everyone. Familiar names. Yeah, we got some Roy Showman fans out there. And I see my picture on YouTube stream is better than ever. So I don't think I've ever looked as good as I do at this particular moment. So if you have access to a computer, you might want to jump on YouTube and see how great I look. By the way, it's a blank screen, just FYI. Anyway, enough foolery. Let's see if you want to join the show. Maybe you have questions you'd like to pose to Carl. The number is 888-526-2151. It's 888-526-2151. Or if you want to send an email, a question, comment, maybe you want to share something that's going on, something going on with your family or coworkers or in regards to explaining, sharing the faith. Maybe you made a breakthrough and you'd like to share what worked for you. Shoot us an email at questions@handsonapologetics.com. And that goes straight to the dojo mailbox. And by the way, handsonapologetics is, .com is one of my two websites, also GaryMachuta.com. So, and if you go on there, you go to HOA Live, and you can see what's in store for you for the entire week and also access old broadcast, or even better, just go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and go to the shows menu, and you can access all the Hands-On Apologetics programs, all the ones you missed, and also all the other great programs that are given by Virgin Most Powerful. So anyway, access that. It's a great resource. But let's jump into our exercises, shall we? The fallacy for today is the argument from silence. Now, the argument for silence occurs when you use the absence of evidence as positive evidence for a position. Okay. So it uses the absence of evidence as actually something that supports a position. For example, and again, with fallacies, usually the examples are better than the definitions. If you were talking to, say, a Baptist successionist, this is a person who believes that there was actually Baptists from the very beginning and they existed throughout church history, and you ask them, well, how do you know that the Catholic Church supposedly destroyed all the records of the ancient Baptist? If they reply, well, proof that they existed is because there's no trace of them in history, therefore the church must have destroyed the record. That is an argument from silence, because you're using the absence of something as like a positive thing that you could build a case on. Another, another cool example comes from C.S. Lewis, the Protestant author. He said it's like arguing that there must be an invisible cat in a chair, the evidence being that you can't see it. Okay, because if you could see it, it would be a visible cat, right? Okay, so you get the idea. It's a little absurd and kind of easy to pick out when somebody's using an argument from silence. But, you know, there are some times where silence can be positive. It can be used as part of an argument. For example, under very strict conditions, though, I should point that out. For example, if someone gives an exhaustive list of something so that whatever is not on the list is excluded, purposely, deliberately, then the absence of something on that list is positive evidence against something. Okay, so hopefully that makes sense. And that's our finding of fallacy, the argument from silence. And let's jump down to our Meet the Early Church Father for today. And like I said, today is Dionysius the Great, who flourished roughly around AD 248 to 265. And that's what I love about the early church fathers. You know, I live in Michigan, and probably some of the early stuff in Michigan that's not Native American probably comes from the 1810s. You might be able to find something in the late 1700s. But man, when you're talking church history, you go all the way back. So this is in the 200s. Dionysius the Great was the son of a wealthy pagan parents, and he became one of the most remarkable and accomplished pupils of Origen of Alexandria. We've talked a lot about Origen lately. In 231 AD, he succeeded Heraclius as the head of the catechetical school in Alexandria, and in 248 AD, he eventually became the bishop of Alexandria. So he's held head of that very famous catechetical school, and also he became bishop. And we know that Dionysius made extensive writings. He wrote a lot, but unfortunately we only have two complete writings of his. The rest is preserved by fragments of quotations, mostly from the church historian Eusebius, which is not unusual because Eusebius does a lot of quotations, and also from Athanasius, St. Athanasius, who I believe will be an early church father we're going to talk about later this week. So I just want to give you one quote from him. This is a very interesting quote. It's preserved in writings of Athanasius, and he quotes him as saying this. Now listen closely now. Quote, "There never was a time when God was not the Father. The Son, being the brightness of the light eternal, is certainly himself eternal. For as the light always exists, it is clear that the brightness likewise existed always. It is by the fact that it's shining that the existence of light is perceived, and there cannot be light which is not illuminating. Since, therefore, the Father is eternal, the Son, being light from light, is eternal." Okay, now that's a beautiful explanation of how the Son is co-eternal with the Father. As we say in the Creed, God from God, light from light, true God from true God. But I also want to point out that his proof of the co-eternality of the Son with the Father comes from the Book of Wisdom, which is a deuterocanonical book. This book is accepted by Catholics and Orthodox as authoritative scripture. It's part of the Old Testament, but it's rejected by Protestants, and it's said that it is not capable of confirming doctrine. Well, what's interesting is Dionysius the Great, and apparently also Athanasius, who quotes him, believed it was authoritative and canonical. So isn't that interesting? Here we have a deuterocanonical book demonstrating something about the Trinity. All right. Well, coming up on the other side, great day break, we are going to talk to Master Apologist Carl Keating about debating Catholicism. Stay tuned, everybody. Trust me, you do not want to miss this next segment.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. And we have a very special guest up, Carl Keating. He's a prominent Catholic apologist and author. He's the founder and former president of Catholic Answers, a lay apostolate of Catholic apologetics and evangelism. He received his undergraduate degree in applied math at the University of California, San Diego, and he went on to his Juris Doctorate degree and also a degree in theology at the University of San Diego. He's retired from Catholic Answers in 2017, and since then, Carl's been busy writing some excellent books, not only on apologetics, but also other genres. So if you want to check out some of Carl's books, go to www.carlkeating.com. And you're familiar with him because we've interviewed him with his book, The Book for Life, and also The Francis Feud. Today we're going to talk about debating Catholicism. So, Carl, welcome to Hands on Apologetics.
Gary, it's great to be back with you. Thanks.
Yeah, you know, in preparation for this interview, Carl, I went to YouTube and been watching some of your old debates. You know, a couple of them are there from the books. But, you know, one thing I took me back was I forgot how wild and woolly those days really were.
Well, that's true. And I remember the wildness and wooliness sufficiently that I won't go back and watch those videos.
Yeah, I'm the same way. It's tough to watch, you know, stuff that you've done a while ago. But tell us a little bit about the books, Debating Catholicism.
Well, Debating Catholicism is really four books in one. I've published as separate volumes four transcripts of debates that I was in with prominent anti-Catholics. And I've gathered them together in an omnibus volume called Debating Catholicism. The constituent books are called The Bible Battle, High Desert Showdown, Tracking Down the True Church, and Face Off with the Next Priest. So any one of those books can be read easily in an evening because they are the lightly edited transcripts of the debates that I was in. The debates in real time lasted anywhere from 2 to 4 hours apiece, counting the Q&A session. But I've edited them so that they're all about the same length. And as I say, those books stand separately, but also then as this omnibus volume, Debating Catholicism. And all of them are available at Amazon. And someone can track them down just by searching on my name.
Yes, absolutely. And I highly recommend it, too. The editing job you did was very good because you actually made your opponent's arguments stronger than they actually were.
Well, what I did try to do, I think I succeeded in the editing, is I made the flow of the debates clean and easy to follow. Yes. I got rid of the ums and the ahs that are very natural in any public discussion, as we will have here on radio. Those necessarily come up. But, of course, they don't flow very well when you're trying to read text.
Right.
I also tried to get rid of duplicative material, and especially in the Q&A sessions, those questions from audience members where the person was trying to give a speech rather than ask a question. But what I was very careful to do is I maintained all of my opponent's best arguments. My thinking is that no matter how ineffective I might have been at times in some of my responses, I think the Catholic position largely carries itself. And so it can stand up to really any claim that's leveled against it. And so I preserve their best arguments, and I try to even occasionally silently correct some mistakes that they said, whether of dates or names or what have you, so that there's none of this gotcha kind of stuff there where I try to score some points based on a slip of the tongue from the other side.
Right. Yeah, that's very important, too. How many debates have you done over your career?
I don't know. Well, more than what I have here, but these happen to be ones that I had transcripts of. Not a few of the debates that I was in, for example, a famed one in your own area with Dave Hunt, the very prominent anti-Catholic. I was never given a transcript of that debate, so I'm not able to include it. But I had these four transcripts, and when I went back to them, they seemed to read well. I thought the debates were still interesting. The material brought up in the debates is all perennial stuff. It doesn't go away, unfortunately. Yeah. These misconceptions and allegations about the Catholic Church, its history, its doctrines, its people, these allegations have been around already for centuries, and unfortunately they probably will be around for quite a long time after this, but they need to be addressed. So even though these debates were some years ago now, they're as relevant today as they were at the time that the debates were held.
Yes, absolutely. Although, you know, credit to you and also Catholic Answers, I think they have tamed down quite a bit. Maybe because there's less fundamentalist out there. But, you know, you kind of called them on that there's no data to support certain claims. And I think they kind of were chastened by that because it seems like debates now are a bit more reasonable and not quite as, I don't know, what would be a term to describe the Wild West. Yeah, lawless.
Yeah, you know there's I see a kind of parallel with the pro-life, pro-abortion debate. Back in the 70s and 80s, particularly, the other side always talked in terms of the unborn just being a clump of cells and so forth. That's largely gotten past now. You still hear occasionally some people saying that, but with the ultrasound that has come up in the meantime and so on, you really can't effectively make that argument if you're on the pro-abortion side. You've got to use some other kind of argument. And you've got to more or less acknowledge, yes, that's actually a child, but I think we have cause to kill it, okay? Yeah. Where in the old days, the standard argument was, it's not even a human being, it's just a clump of cells, okay? Mm-hmm. There's something parallel here. Back when some of these debates were done, there was a great influx into fundamentalism from the Catholic Church. Not all these people I debated, by the way, would be called fundamentalists, but mainly they'd be in that kind of that part of the spectrum. I remember that in the 1980s, I found data that indicated that every year in the U.S., 100,000 Catholics left the church to join fundamentalism. That's just fundamentalism, not evangelicalism in the wider sense, and not other religions. So yeah, many hundreds of thousands of Catholics were opting out of the Catholic Church. And the traffic back then seemed to be in one direction only. It was a one-way street. There were very few fundamentalists coming into the Catholic Church. Now, thanks be to God, it's largely the other way around. There are still some Catholics who leave and become fundamentalists. I had an email from one justice last week. But they're now the exception rather than the rule, so to speak. Yeah. We see far more people coming into the Catholic Church from fundamentalism and, of course, evangelicalism and other faiths than we did back in the 80s and 90s and, say, around the turn of the century. So some things have changed, but there are still folks with the same arguments. So even if the traffic of church switching is now focused in a different direction, the arguments are largely the same. The prejudices are largely the same. Many of the folks that I debated had constituencies, for example, in their own churches, consisting of people who were brought up with anti-Catholic sentiments that they imbibed either from their family life or from the pulpit at their own churches. And that kind of thing still persists. Yeah. So as I say, none of this stuff goes away. The point is, can we understand how to deal with it and how to respond to it when we meet it? And that's what I tried to do in these debates.
Yes. And so, I mean, in a very real way, I think you were kind of a frontiersman in that you had, I mean, talk about, in fact, why don't we talk a little bit about the particular debates, because there's so much to learn from it. For example, let's take your the Bible Battle book with you versus Peter Ruckman.
Yes.
Talk about...
Yeah, he was quite a character.
Yeah, he was.
Ruckman was, I call him the king of the King James Only movement. He was the most prominent fundamentalist in this subgroup within fundamentalism that said that the King James translation also known as the Authorized Version, had a quasi-inspired status, that somehow the Holy Spirit prompted the translators at that time to produce the ideal English version. So he went around castigating other Protestants, even other fundamentalists, who would use anything except the original edition of the King James Version, not even later revised editions. So he was on the outs, even with a lot of fundamentalists. But he was on the ins with a lot of them because he was very strongly anti-Catholic and had a kind of aggressive and abusive personality that many of them liked and admired. So he was, as I say, he's quite a bit of a character.
Yeah, you definitely pick that up when you watch the video, because that particular debate is on YouTube.
I it was a strange experience for me, Gary. It really was, because I remember, I mentioned this in the book, when I was first introduced to him by the minister of the Baptist church where we met. This was in Long Beach, California. Ruckman, you know, shook my hand, but he sort of huffed and puffed about it. He grunted. At the end of the debate, when we had our wrap-up comments, now he went first, so I was the last. And after he concluded, he actually left the room, leaving me to be there by myself to talk to the audience. He would not shake my hand on the way out at the end of the debate.
Wow.
And that's the kind of strangeness, you know, I mean, it sort of takes you back, but it gives you a sense of the man and the way he operated throughout the debate. My favorite memory of this was we each had a table we sat at, and then there was a lectern with a microphone in between. So we'd get up alternately to give our remarks. When he got up there, there was a man in the front row, obviously a fan of his, who held up a sign saying, "Amen, brother." And when I got up at the microphone, he flipped the sign over, and it said, "Repent, Catholic." So that was, you know, and of course, Ruckman did not rebuke this fellow for what he did so discourteously. That was the kind of thing that he encouraged.
Oh,
so
wow.
It gives you a sense of what the audience was like.
Yeah, hey, well, we're coming up on the break when we come on the other side. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that, because, boy, war with placards. You got to like that. All right, everybody, you're listening to Hands On Apologetics. We're talking to Master Apologist Carl Keating. You don't want to miss this. Stay tuned.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking to Master Apologist Carl Keating, and I guess you could say it's fight night in the Apologetics Dojo because we're going over some championship battles that Carl's had in the past, and we're talking about his debate with fundamentalist Peter Ruckman. And, Carl, I can't even imagine trying to deliver an opening statement with placards going on. How did you keep your – and you did a wonderful job keeping your composition. How did you do it?
Partly out of fear, because remember, my audience was almost exclusively his fans. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to be finding them at the end of the debate rushing up to the dais with fire in their eyes.
So yeah, that's true.
I did my best to mind my manners. I think I succeeded. It was a strange situation. This is the First Baptist Church in Long Beach, which is the town I grew up in. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I regret about the debate is that I didn't have an opportunity while there to see the church's art collection. It was actually had an art collection with a lot of Catholic, especially Marian, stuff. Hmm. That's it was so weird. I didn't get to look at the material. I look back at this. During the break, Terry Barber got on the phone to me. And Terry was in the audience. Oh. And for a moment, we reminisced about it. It was a strange event. Some of the things that Ruckman said took me off guard because, you know, neither one of us had a sense of what the other would bring up. You had to speak and respond on the fly.
Right.
One of the things he mentioned was that he had read the Bible through all the way, by that point, 106 times.
Yeah, I remember.
And what occurred to me later is that that was wonderful proof of the failure of the Bible alone theory. Because if you can read the Bible 106 times and still get so much wrong, then you do need an official interpreter.
Yeah. You always think of those great things after the fact, you know, not during the heat of battle. Yeah, that would have been great. And that was also, it was like a week-long Bible conference, wasn't it? And so
yes,
he was doing amens.
Sure. You know, he was calling out the audience, amen, brother, and they'd respond. And he was really working them up.
Yeah.
And that took me a bit by surprise, of course, because that's a very non-Catholic way of dealing with an audience. And in my previous public remarks, I'd always usually been with either a Catholic audience or a mixed audience of fairly friendly people on both sides. Mm-hmm. So when I debated Ruckman with an almost exclusively fundamentalist fan club of his, I wasn't really prepared for the way he worked the audience. And he was pretty effective at it. But I think my attitude at the time was not so much being startled, but being bemused. Hmm.
Right, right. Yeah, that's... So what was... just one last question on that debate. What was... Once you got into it and you saw the dynamics of the audience and everything, what was your main goal? Was it to just hammer home one point, or just to be a good example
well,
of
I
a
felt
Catholic?
Since he came up with a number of points, as all my debaters would, of course, in the course of these debates. And I think my general approach, whenever I debated, was to try to show at least on a couple points that the audience was sold a bill of goods, that something had been represented or misrepresented about the Catholic Church, and that if I could disprove to them one or two of these points, that I hoped would be enough for them to go away and start thinking, maybe I wasn't told the full story. Maybe there's something to be looked into here. Maybe the Catholic Church might be a little bit Christian or what have you. So that was my goal. There was no hope, of course, to undo everything that a debater such as Ruckman would claim, because he would just come up with the most bizarre things sometimes, he more than some of the other debaters. And as you know from your own public exchanges, one sentence that's mischaracterizing the church might take two paragraphs to respond to. Well, you can't respond to everything, you know. So you have to isolate or focus on what you're trying to do. And that's what I tried to do here. I mean, one of the things that Ruckman came up with was a mathematical theory. And this is the way he actually approached it. He said that his position, not just about Christianity in general, but his particular ideas, could be proven to be mathematically true. And then he would go on and he said, well, every book of the Bible has prophecy in it if you know where to look for it. And he would say the odds of this prophecy being fulfilled was, say, 1 in 100. And then you've got so many prophecies in this book or that book or all together in the Bible. And so the chance of his interpretation of Christianity being true was, you know, 1 in however many zillion. But it is true, and therefore that alone proves his position to be accurate. It was a bizarre kind of approach, but he gave his audience, none of whom I think had a college degree in math as I did at the time, they lapped that up and said, okay, that's sort of a scientific approach to proving the Ruckman position. He used numbers and so on. And of course it wasn't. So that was one of the things I tried to get through to them, is that this kind of argument doesn't prove a thing. And, you know, again, I'm not sure to what extent I was successful with any particular individual, but in each of these debates, I did seem to make an impress, at least on some of the audience. And, you know, I was grateful for that.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I think you did. I don't know if they bothered to listen to it. I thought you did an excellent job against Peter Ruckman. Let's go to second book, The High Desert Showdown, with Jim Blackburn. I'm not familiar with this debate. What's the background to it?
This is a debate where there's a high desert town called Ridgecrest. It's about halfway up California on the eastern side, not far from the Nevada border. The only thing there really in a town of 28,000 is a military base, and that's what the town is built around. But it's a very cross-section town of American population. And I was contacted by the Catholics there because there was a fundamentalist minister named Jim Blackburn who had set up shop there and was causing a lot of scandal in the town with his anti-Catholic activities. And the Catholics were just at wit's end. They didn't know what to do with this because the town was being torn apart by this guy. So they asked me to come up and debate him. And I first went up, and in the evening before the debate, I spoke at the local community college. And then we had the debate the following day. And it was covering sort of the panoply of standard fundamentalist charges against the church. I think it went out pretty well, because it was a few weeks after that Blackman's church folded up and he went elsewhere. So it seemed to have its immediate effect, fortunately. Unfortunately, after that, I lost track of him. I don't know what ultimately happened to the man. You know, Ruckman I followed over the years later, but Jim Blackburn, I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds, you know, reading the transcript of the debate, it sounds like there was a lot of anger and hostility on his part, because he keeps making references about getting angry because you should be angry if you know the truth is being spoken against or something like that. Was it really a hot, contentious debate?
Relatively so, I would say. I mean, he wasn't particularly rude to me, but he was rude to the Catholic Church. And yes, he was a man with, as I say, anger issues. But that, in a way, helped his cause pre-debate, in that he was able to transfer some of that anger toward the Catholic Church into the hearts and minds of members of his congregation. So he had support that was built up, and he, in essence, was getting his folks to be active beyond the confines of the walls of their little church. And so that's why there was this trouble brewing in the town of Ridgecrest, because it wasn't simply something that his congregants heard on Sunday morning. It was something that they took beyond their church. And so he was giving them a good, bad example, we might say. And so his anger propelled him in a certain way, and that was passed along to them in the form of miscommunication, misunderstanding about the Catholic religion, and then a desire on their part to emulate their leader.
Yes, yeah. We have a little under 2 minutes. He made a comment that the local church didn't have anybody that would stand up to him, so they had to get a hired gun in, and namely you. How did you defuse that in the debate?
Actually, now I don't remember exactly what I said, but I presume what I said is simply that I'm just a Catholic explaining to you what the facts are about the Catholic Church, and it's true. I mean, the Catholics in Ridgecrest didn't have anybody of their own to take on such a fellow. Not that they weren't willing to, but I don't think that they had anybody with sufficient background or experience to go publicly with this guy. And the local, you know, church leadership, the priests, weren't in a position to do that. So, yes, they had a hired gun, so to speak, bringing me up. But I think it worked out effectively because I wasn't part of the local discussion. I had an arm's lengthness about me. And, you know, in a way, I could be perceived as being more objective in relating what the Catholic Church was all about.
Yeah, that's a very good point, because there was a lot of history. He was putting out ads and things like that,
ads in the local newspaper. The publisher was sympathetic to his position, and those ads caused a big ruckus in town because everybody saw them. You know, this is back in the days pre-internet, basically, where everybody read the local paper, you know, and the local paper reported on all the local activities. So that was a bad combination.
Yeah, and you came riding on the white steed to the rescue. So that's good. It was a good match. We're talking to Carl Keating. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about one debate I'm so glad I wasn't at. Stay tuned.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. Listen to Hands-On Apologetics. We're talking to Master Apologist Carl Keating about Debating Catholicism. It's a compendious book of four transcripts of debates. And you want to pick this up. Anybody that's serious about defending the faith, it's good to you know, read these transcripts and get a feel for how to answer arguments, how to respond to things. And Carl, you know, before I forget, all us Catholics, I believe, owe you a debt of gratitude for your courage and fortitude and to step into the ring during this wild and crazy time in the, was it, late 80s, early 90s. Thank you so much for your work over the years.
Well, it's kind of you to say that, Gary. It's also kind of you to mention that people ought to pick up Debating Catholicism, and of course they should. They can get it at Amazon, and they can find out about my other books at carlkeating.com.
Absolutely.
We should turn now, I suppose, to, I think you were alluding to the third debate in this book as being rather singular. You mentioned it before the break.
That's a kind way of putting it.
It's probably, I would say, it's the most bizarre debate that I was ever in.
Yes. Now, is that Jose Ventilacion?
Ventilacion.
Oh, okay.
properly Ventilacion, although sort of punishly, we would refer to this later as the Keating and Ventilation debate. Jose Ventilacion was and still is a prominent minister in the church called Iglesia Ni Cristo. That's Tagalog, the native Filipino language. It translates as Church of Christ. Iglesia Ni Cristo was founded in 1914, and the grandson of the founder is now the present head of that sect. The man who founded it, although baptized Catholic, fell away from the church as a youth. He joined the Protestant church, eventually even came to the U.S. to study at a Protestant seminary. But his church, his doctrinal positions could be considered more along the lines of the Jehovah's Witnesses than the regular Protestantism. The church always has been extremely anti-Catholic. In the U.S., most of its members are Filipino extraction, although a fair number are not. And I remember that when this debate was held, which is in the gymnasium of a large high school, with all the bleachers extended and chairs put on the floor, there were about 3,500 people in the audience. 3,000 of them were members of this sect, and they had been bussed in from all over Southern California.
Yeah.
And it was a summer debate. It was a preternaturally hot day. And I swear, Gary, that they had turned up the heater in the gym anyway, because I was pouring sweat during the debate. I went through several quarts of water.
Yeah. You know, I remember reading about... Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I remember reading about this debate in This Rock magazine. And you said that you were pulling up in your wingman. I don't remember if it was Pat Madrid or not. Start praying an act of contrition.
Yeah.
Just that foreboding of what was about to happen.
Yeah, there's a late Charlie Harvey who was with us at the time. And there were so many yellow buses pulling up. I thought at first we were intruding on maybe a high school football game or something. But no, these are people bussed in from miles away to give support to their minister. This is the only time I've debated someone belonging to a sect that truly could be called cultish. Mm-hmm. It was an unnerving experience. There was a platform that we were on, and we each had separate tables with, again, the lectern in the middle. There were supposed to be just two of us up there, Ventilacion and myself, but he had two or three helpers at his table, his so-called seconds, who during the debate would pass him notes so he would know what to say. The sound was controlled by their people so that when I got up to the microphone, mysteriously, the sound was at a lower volume than when he was there. But the first thing that really got me wondering was that I went up to my table and set out my materials, and a fellow seemingly from the audience took a folding chair and sat next to me. And I asked him, "Who are you?" He said, "I'm your bodyguard." "My bodyguard?" "Yes," he said. "Sometimes in the Philippines, when we have debates and they don't go our way, our people storm the dais." Wow. Oh, great, I thought. You know. So, and then I looked down at the audience, and they had people who were ushering folks into seats, almost as though they were assigned seats. And I noticed, very interestingly, that most of the ushers were people of non-Filipino extraction, because they wanted to highlight that their church was not limited just to Filipino Americans. But as I say, at that event, there were about 500 Christians, counting Catholics and Protestants, and then 3,000 people from this cult, which I can't really call a Christian denomination, because like the JWs, they don't believe in the Trinity, which is the core Christian doctrine. So, yeah, it was a strange event. I mean, I was interrupted by my opponent when I would be speaking. I was interrupted by one of his seconds. This is the only time in my public appearances that I ever lost my cool. At one point, I was at the microphone, and I was giving my comments about something, and Ventilacion's second interrupts me and starts yelling at me. And I point to him. I say, "Be quiet. Sit down. I'm debating him. I'm not debating you." Yeah. So that's the closest I ever came to losing my cool. But it was a strange experience and somewhat unnerving.
Yeah, good Lord. And now, was this, correct me if I'm wrong, was this a debate where he also had slides? Or was that a different
debate?
Yes.
He had brought a slide projector and was doing that. You know, he had fancied things up quite a bit without my knowledge, so that it was an unfair situation. I confronted Ventilacion before the debate. Said, you know, it was supposed to be one-on-one, not one-on-four or whatever. It was supposed to be just the two of us. There's nothing about a slideshow, nothing about your helpers and all this. He said, "If you don't want to debate on my terms, you can leave, and I'll just give an instruction to the people." Well, I wasn't about to walk out on that. So, and I tried to make good use of that pre-debate exchange during the debate itself. My points in the debate were chiefly to let the people of Iglesia Ni Cristo know the actual historical origins of their church and how it could not possibly be the church that Christ founded. They, as the Mormons, held that the church apostatized completely in the first century. It didn't come up again until their founder, whether Joseph Smith for the Mormons this fellow who founded Iglesia, had a revelation, you know, in later times and refounded the original church, which had disappeared for, you know, 18 and 19 centuries.
Right. Yeah. And I think inadvertently they played into your hand, because that gives you the sympathy of the audience that they're kind of being bullies and triple teaming you and so on.
Yes. As a matter of fact, in the fourth debate in this book, which is against the former priest, Bart Brewer, that's exactly what happened very clearly to me. Because after that debate, people came up to me and apologized to me for the way my opponent acted. And I remember one woman in particular saying, "I'm not going to fellowship here anymore." And another woman's telling me, "I may never become a Catholic, but after this debate, I'm no longer an anti-Catholic." And that was largely a response to the way my opponents treated me, and more particularly the Catholic Church.
Right. Yeah. We have maybe two more minutes. Tell us a little bit about that debate.
Yeah, Bart Brewer was an ex-Carmelite priest. The debate was held at his church. He wasn't the minister there, but his minister served as the moderator for the the event. Barn I worked with off and on for, you know, knew for a number of years. He was somewhat effective with his little ministry of mission to Catholics, as it was called, pulling Catholics out of the church. He would regale fundamentalists with stories about the inside life of the Catholic priest and so on. He had left the Catholic Church fairly early on after being ordained. Under the influence of his mother, he became a Seventh-day Adventist and later became a Baptist. And he was vociferously anti-Catholic and also anti-intellectual. I once visited him at his office, and I noticed a bookcase with a few books, some of which were actually good books. And I complimented him on those. He said, "Oh, I don't read any of those. All I ever read is the Bible." And because he never read anything past the Bible, he was not able to get even a fair evaluation of the Bible. Yeah. And therefore of the Catholic Church. So he was a man who had problems while he was a priest. He had been actually sent to the Philippines at first and was booted out by a bishop over there. And when he came back to the U.S., he abandoned the faith and eventually became an anti-Catholic fundamentalist. But he was fairly effective while he had this ministry. He went around the country, the U.S. chiefly, but sometimes overseas, and regaled them with stories about what Catholics really believed, although of course, he misrepresented so much.
Right.
He died, so far as I know, not reconciled to the church and not having forsworn the work he did against the religion he was once a leader of.
Yeah, that's sad. Well, hey, Carl, thank you so much for coming on and talking about debating Catholicism. Again, how can we get hold of more information about your books?
Well, about the books in general, my writing activities, go to carlkeating.com. And to purchase any of the books, whether as paperback or as ebooks, go to Amazon and just search on my name.
Very good. All right. Well, thank you, Carl. Thanks for joining us.
Gary, thanks for having me again. I liked it.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you. Yeah, I highly recommend Carl's books. He's a great writer. And boy, that book takes me back to the debating days, you know, back in the Wild West fundamentalist movement. So remember, coming up this week, we're going to have Roy Shoman come on Tuesday. He's going to talk about how Mary led this Jewish wunderkind into the Catholic Church. Wednesday, we're going to have the blue-collar apologist John Martinona join us, talk about faith alone. And Friday, Matt Swaim, who's from Sacred Heart Radio fame, is also going to come and share his journey. So thank you so much for listening, everybody. And coming up next, High Intensity Talk Radio with Jesse Romero and Terry Barber. It's the Terry and Jesse Show. And boy, thank you so much for listening. And as always, please support Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Please keep us in your prayers. Share us. And pass the word along on social media. Of course, if you can, please support us with financial contributions. All of that helps. Spread the word with charity and clarity. And it's time for me to turn off the lights here in the Midwest Command Center of Apologetics Dojo. It's been great to talk to you. Thank you for listening. And again, coming up next, Gary and Jesse. God bless everyone.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.